Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Beer Seal. We're doing a special show in February 2015 at the Two Roads Brewing Company in Stratford, Connecticut. Beer Sessions Radio is brought to you by Union Beer Distributors, supplier of world-class ales and lagers. Today, we'll be live tweeting when you hear the show. Check us out at @beer_sessions. That's a great way to keep track of us and stay in touch. So, for a long time, we've been good buddies with Phil Markowski, who wrote a great book about farmhouse ales and was a brewer for a long time at Southampton Public House. And he's part of the co-founder and master brewer for the Two Roads Brewing up in Stratford, Connecticut. Really special day today. I'm with Emily Souter and John Kleinchester, who's a good buddy, all part of the staff up here. So we're in Stratford, Connecticut, drinking away, and cheers. Welcome to the show. So, yeah. Phil, it's so great to come up here. I know this is a very special place now. It's the largest brewery in Connecticut, but you're making the best beers and specialty beers, so...
Tell us a little bit about this trying. First of all, great to have you here, Jimmy. And Two Roads is something that the germ was planted probably 20 years ago between myself and Brad Hiddle and Clem Polani, who are we're three of the four founding partners, and we started talking about doing our own brewery somewhere in the mid 90s. And we kept in touch over the years, worked together here and there on various projects. And then when Brad was chief marketing officer at Pabst, and Pabst was sold, he didn't want to work for the new owners and said, hey, let's start this brewery once and for all. So Two Roads was born in 2011, roughly, where we started to seriously talk about it. And 2012, the end of 2012 is when we opened up. So we moved quickly once we made the decision to go forward. The name itself has multiple meanings, but it's drawn from the Robert Frost poem, where the key line of taking the road less traveled was a mantra that we applied to Two Roads in various ways.
Just for a sense of place, what is so cool is that Robert Frost, was he a New Englander? Mm-hmm. But I'm definitely in New England now, and I'm from New England, and being in this little town of Stratford, there's like an old gas station across, what is it, Sitco, Emily?
Yes, Sitco.
And the old little houses that remind me of like the 1950s, you really feel like it's a sense of place. I know a lot of our listeners, when they come to the New York area, they want to travel to breweries. I think going to breweries is one of the most popular things for people now. We're not too far away. You can take the train up here, or you can drive up Route 95. But you guys, this is a complex. So you're making great beer, but you also have a tasting room, and it's really worth the visit. I mean, for Emily, what else are you guys doing up here? You've got a tasting room. Tell us about some of the programs that you guys offer.
We got a tasting room that holds about 225 or so.
About that.
Saturdays, this place is bumping. I mean, it's insane. We're in a 100-year-old factory. This used to be the U.S. Baird factory. They made four-slide metal bending machines, so... They made piston parts for GM in their heyday in the 50s, and 500 people worked in this facility. It's pretty crazy. And they worked three shifts, just like us. So a little more, we don't have 500 people working here. But in the summer, we've got a beer garden that's outside. Actually, this summer, we're going to have a new lawn put down on the other side of our facility, and we're going to do a concert series. We've got a concert in June called Road Jam. We do an Oktoberfest. We do a 5K beach run in August. There's an event room that seats about 75. Every weekend, there's a 30th surprise birthday party. Apparently, that's what people do
30's
here.
30's a new 20.
30, yeah.
That's awesome. This is a sense of place here coming up here into New England. And John Kleinchester drove me up from the East Village today, and the first thing, I was waiting the whole ride. It wasn't that long, but I just was dying for one of your pills. And so I had two pills. It was before the show. But we're having a great time. And John, too, on the way up, you said, so you feel that this brewery here in Stratford, Connecticut kind of saved this town.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be able to tell you as much about Stratford as these guys would, just because I don't get to spend as much time up here. But from what I understand, this was a very industrial town and you guys correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that, you know, we became a little bit of a beacon here, and people sort of rallied around having a hometown brewery in Stratford, and I think a lot of the locals seem to enjoy showing up and coming to our bottle release events and, you know, just supporting us, you know, supporting local. Obviously, you know, we have the same thing going on in New York City, but it's nice to have something in Connecticut that sort of draws people in, you know.
And just to add to what John said, I mean, the reality here, we took over a building that had been vacant, you know, once had, you know, was a symbol of the local industrial might. And unfortunately, that sort of thing doesn't happen very often. And when we first opened the doors of our tasting room a little over 2 years ago, it was really impressive and frankly heartwarming to see the number of local people who turned out immediately, who were here to support us, who were interested in it, what we were doing, and seemingly had no idea what craft beer was. And now we hear from those people that, you know, I can't drink Bud anymore. I can't drink the beers I used to drink because you guys have turned me on to, you know, different beers. And that is honestly one of the most satisfying things I can hear, is people who had really no concept of craft beer, but came in because we were local, because we were here, because we came in and resurrected this building, and now they're diehard craft fans. And that just, a few things more satisfying than that, honestly. It's just really great to see, and we see it every day.
Seems to be a big part of what craft beer is, and even in the city, going out to the last stop neighborhoods in Queens and Bronx and having people set up breweries, it's changing the neighborhoods, and it's so great to be part of that and come on.
Yeah,
so in terms of the beers, I mean, what's the first beer that we're drinking?
We're drinking Workers' Comp, which is our saison, and this one is I guess what is now being called session beer. This is a sessionable beer, and that is below 5% alcohol. It's about 4.8% alcohol, and it is in that sense related to the farmhouse ales of yore, where they were lower in alcohol. They were really more of a refreshing drink, and people did drink them throughout the day. You know, back in the heyday of the saisonneur, which was a name for a migrant farm worker in French-speaking Belgium, they used to get a ration of 9 liters per day of beer.
Per person,
wow. Apparently. I mean, that's two cases of change. So it's a lot of beer. I'm sorry, it's a case of beer. And to have that throughout the day, it had better be low in alcohol and refreshing. So that's what we modeled our workers' comp over, and that's where the name comes from, because it was part of the compensation for these, you know, these migrant farm workers. And we also kind of used some imagination, which you really have to do with saison. You know, having researched the book on it, I can tell you there's not a lot of historical documentation on what the style was. So there's some conjecture that you draw. In our case, we use a wide variety of grains in the beer. You know, most beers are made with malted barley, some malted wheat, you know, as people know. And, of course, malted barley and malted wheat are in Workers' Comp. But in addition to those, there's raw wheat, there's raw and malted oats, and raw and malted rye. So there's, and spelt. So there's a wide variety of different grains in this beer, which is, it's just where it derives some of its complexity. And I have to believe that's how it was in the day of, you know, the heyday of farmhouse brewing. They brewed with what they had on hand. So that's kind of our connection to that era with Workers' Comp. And we also use a, you know, very expressive saison yeast, which generates a lot of fruity, particularly tropical fruit flavors. So
it's farmhouse ales. I know a lot of home brewers read it. It really influenced Do you think that your book helped resuscitate the saison style?
I think certainly indirectly. It just kind of laid out some basic guidelines. What I tried to communicate in the book was that the people who have been producing saisons for a long period of time have kind of put their own spin on it, that it's not this very neatly defined style of beer, which, you know, many are, and that tends to be the emphasis of, you know, those who come from the either British or German tradition, which is really, you know, the established breweries in America, and that and craft brewing, those are the early influences. So everybody kind of is used to this strict definition of a style. But the Belgians tend to zig where others zag. And so it's really about your own interpretation of what that is. But, you know, if you could classify certain common characteristics of Saison, it would be that they're, generally speaking, very dry and refreshing and fruity. You know, you can apply those three kind of parameters and work a lot within those to create your own version.
And you know, from your book, Phil, I mean, you define there's beer de garde and saisons, and I know even the saisons that I've tried, even from the same producers, they might be as low as something 4% refreshing and light up to a 7 or 8%. Can you define for us the difference between a beer de garde and a saison?
Well, you know, however similar the two styles might have been, if, you know, I can loosely use the term style. You know, it was a regional brews that were made in this relatively small region. Evolved over time, and they're not as old as some people may think. You know, the modern beer de garde style is something that kind of spun out in the 1970s, and certain smaller French brewers adopted that style and ran with it and applied modern lager brewing techniques to those to create something, you know, a little bit distinct from Saison, in that most modern beer de gardes are relatively clean in character. They don't have these really intense fruity flavors that the yeast generates as saisons do. They also have a tendency to be more malt driven and, you know, slightly sweeter, fuller bodied. So those are characteristics that separate the two styles. Although they were born of the same region, they've kind of morphed into being, you know, two now distinct styles. The French brewers have taken the beer de garde as their tradition and run with it, and then the on the other side of the border, which used to be one region called Flanders, but on what is now Wallonia, the French-speaking section of Belgium, they've tended toward the fruity, drier saisons. But
I remember that Don from Van Bergen de Wolf, he said when he first started his importing company 35 years ago, he went to Saison DuPont, and they were close to discontinuing that style. And it's amazing now, because for us, we think of saisons as being such a key part of craft beer.
Well, you know, as it stands now, there's, in terms of sheer number of brands of saison brewed, there's probably 10 times more brewed in the U.S., and that may be an understatement, than there are in its native Belgium. So American craft brewers have certainly taken it and reinvented it, reinterpreted it, and it's all good. It's all exciting, and a lot of interesting stuff is coming out of it, and there's no end in sight.
Are there other American brewers that you really like their saisons?
There are. I mean, I like the stuff from Crooked Stave. You know, that's really interesting. You know, who else is Boulevard Tank 7 is a good one. That's a tough question.
Don't want to point on the question. Spot. Well, no, we tried Mystic from Chelsea,
Mystic's
Madison.
Products are excellent.
They have a
yeah.
table beer, which is like this session one, and then they have a 7% saison.
There are many, many good ones out there. There's just, you know, where to begin without a list in front of me. It's
talking
hard
about
to...
the beer we just had. So the workers' comp saison, these beautiful tasting glasses, and I will say again, I'll put in a pitch to come out to the brewery up here, up in Stratford, Connecticut, because the beers, you know, this is. Was this directly from a tank, or this is on tap here at the brewery?
This is on tap from our tasting room, so we just took it off.
So it just tastes super fresh and good. And, you know, how do you feel about your beers? You know, when you're a brewer, you've got more control at your tasting room than you do almost anywhere. Then how do you ever feel about are you worried about the quality ever of your beer being on tap at some bar in New York City that you never been to? You know, these issues come. How do you guys have to deal with that as brewers? You know, wondering about the quality issues of serving your product. Because, like, right here on the spot, this is one of the best saisons I've ever had. It tastes super fresh and good.
Well, thank you. Yes, it's true that obviously you have more control at the brewery than you do once you ship the beer out. Once it's in your distributor's hands, you lose a certain amount of control. And frankly, it's where we rely on people like John, our sales staff, to you know, police that the beer is fresh, that it's on tap, where it's on tap, it's taken care of, it's not sitting there too long. You know, there's certain things you can't control. How often does the account clean their draft lines? But generally, people who are into good beer, proprietors of beer bars, know to clean their lines off and they take care of things. The fact that a lot of people are getting beer in six barrels as opposed to half barrels means they're selling through faster. So the beer's not lingering. I mean, this is a whole different era from when I first started. You know, people are seriously into craft beer, and it sells. It moves. So it's not like the old days where, you know, you had to go in and drink it yourself or, you know, send your friends in there to keep it moving. It's just, it's moving. And it's great. And again, there's no end in sight to this. But.
John, in New York City, which is where you're the rep, what are some of the accounts where we could get Two Roads on draft?
There's a lot. The first ones that come to mind are Blind Tiger, Barcade. right now, Randolph Beer has us on tap. I mean, really, most of the ones that get craft beer will rotate us pretty frequently. That's the great part about beer is that, you know, everyone's sort of rotating in and out for all the time. So, you know, you can sort of find us anywhere. At the very least, we have some bottles in certain accounts. But, you know, among our best accounts are Blind Tiger, Barcade, Valhalla on the west side, Beer Culture in Midtown, occasionally at Jimmy's Number 43. You know, all the good places that you'd expect to find good beer.
I'll tell you, when you listen to this show, it's going to be New York City Beer Week, so there's a lot of great beers to taste, and including them Two Roads, which you'll find at many great places in New York City. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're doing a special mobile recording at Two Roads Brewing in Stratford, Connecticut as part of New York City Beer Week. We're having a great time. We just drank the Workman's Comp Saison with Phil Markowski, the brewer and co-founder here. And Emily, what were you saying about this? This next beer is also really awesome.
Cheers. Yeah, this is our Road to Ruin Double IPA, 8% alcohol. It's our number one beer in every region that we're in, except New York City, where our Pilsner, your favorite, is our most popular.
Is it really the Pilsner?
Yeah. So,
I did with John Clanchester, my good buddy. You know, this is the fun part of this brewery is that, first, we have a great brewer that we've known for many years. And John Clanchester is like, had this great site. He still does the hashtag beertography. You know, you take pictures of your beer and post it. And so I always knew him for that. And then for a while, he was asking around. He wanted to get a job as a beer rep. And
this is
the story of Two Roads. You guys brought together these cool people. So, John, you got the best job. You had a crappy job working at what kind of show? MTV.
Yeah.
You know, people would think you're a young person. You want to come to New York? Oh, I could work at MTV. Well, he did that.
I did.
And instead, he's chosen to come work with these guys at Two Roads. But why did you want to be a beer rep for so long?
Well, mostly because I had such a strong passion for craft beer. I mean, you know, I think we all have our story of having our sort of craft beer epiphany, some earlier on than others. But, you know, you have your story and then, you know, you sort of fall into it and you realize how much you love it. And then you really ingrain yourself in the culture, especially in New York, where there's so many, even, you know, I don't know how many years ago, but, you know, there's amazing craft beer places that have been around forever, like your place. So you sort of find yourself hanging out at these places and you realize that it's such an amazing scene. Everyone's so, great. Everyone, all the people that work in the industry are so great. And so, of course, for a long time, I was supremely jealous of everyone that worked in the industry and, you know, made friends with a lot of people who were already working in the industry.
So you got the job at Two Roads, you're the rep. Uh-huh. So what's your typical day like? You know, I mean, what do you do as a beer rep?
So, for me, working in the city, for the most part, my days are basically loading up my backpack with samples, fresh samples, and then heading around. Basically, I'll pick a neighborhood to work that day, and usually I'll try to list out some accounts that I want to make sure that I see, and either, you know, deliver our newest beer, which is, you know, we're constantly coming out with Phil's newest creation, you know, our new seasonal, all that good stuff. So I like to drop off new samples of that. But basically, it ends up being a situation where I'm carrying around a large backpack filled to the brim with different beers and dropping off different locations, trying to get some FaceTime with bar owners.
So
and,
you said the other day you went to Queens. So
yeah,
what are some of the accounts in Queens? Because Queens has its own beer week. You know, talk about beer week. There's some great new beer bars in Queens.
Queens is exploding. I mean, the Astoria section alone has become this sort of craft beer row. Broadway in Queens is amazing. You've got you know, places that have been there forever, since like Astoria Beer and Cheese. You've got Sunswick, just to name a few. And then Judy and Punch just opened, same owners as One Mile House in Manhattan. But yeah, like, so Queens, like, I just, you know, in fact, went around to both. There's two Astoria Beer and Cheese locations now, one on Broadway and one in the Ditmars location. And actually, I believe they're opening a location in Manhattan as well. But, you know, the Astoria area is just sort of, it's really finding its footing as far as craft beer goes. It seems like no more than 3 or 4 years ago, there was really a bit of a, not a lull, but, you know, there wasn't that much. Now it's like you can't go more than 2 or 3 blocks without hitting a nice craft beer spot. So I was all over that place yesterday.
Talking about new neighborhoods, mm-hmm. The funny thing is, one reason we're here is I know you're celebrating the 25th anniversary of you as a pro brewer, Phil.
Yeah.
I mean, tell us what it was like in the early days trying to sell beer in New York City.
Well, I can say it was more difficult to sell beer even, you know, a couple blocks from where you were. There just it wasn't this keen interest in local as there is now, for one. And people were suspect of something that was made locally. And I think that may have been a fallback to Prohibition days where, you know, getting a beer from some unknown place, say St. Louis, you know, some far-off place, somehow seemed better to people than, you know, getting a case of Schaefer, for example. And it's really unfortunate, but it's what happened, it seems. So reversing that mindset took some time. Granted, there were plenty of people who were open-minded who were just really, wow, local beer, that's great. I gotta try it. So you had some successes, but unfortunately, back in the early days, there were fewer successes than failures in terms of trying to sell the beer. But, you know, it also, and I'm not a salesperson, but our, you know, salespeople that we had that were successful had a sort of evangelist side to them where they wanted to go and convert people and, you know, explain why craft beer is better, why fresher is better, why local is fresher, all of those things. It's certainly gotten easier. And again, it's all part of the explosion that's taking place these days, which is fantastic to see. And frankly, something I didn't imagine would ever happen, to be honest, you know, based on the early days. But
well, I guess something to celebrate. Yeah, usually at 25 cheers. Years, they talk about retiring, but you're starting your next phase. Well, Road to Ruin, so we're drinking that. So Emily is saying that it's one of your most popular beers.
It's our most popular beer in Connecticut, where we are now. And then we also just released it in a tall boy can, which came out about a month ago. And it's doing really, really well. We just went into Vermont, and I keep seeing photos on social media of my Vermont haul, and it's, you know, the topper and the Lawson's and the, you know, and then the 4-pack of Road to Ruin cans is right there in the front. And it's really cool to see that Road to Ruin's getting the respect it deserves, because it's delicious.
It's great. So tell us about this beer. So the Road to Ruin's double IPA.
It's a double IPA. It's 8% alcohol, which there may be some people who say, oh, it's not a double IPA. But to me, that's, you know, it's plenty strong. You don't want, you know, you don't want the alcohol to become too dominant in the beer. It's got to be part of the flavor profile. And, you know, people want to be able to drink more than one, too. So 8%, I think, is where it needs to be. And in terms of its flavor profile, you know, it's about the hops. There is some malt in there, obviously, enough to balance hops. Really, it's a hop show. And in Road to Ruin, we apply what we like to call the two roads approach, and that we do something a little different. And we emphasize some hops that are not widely used in craft brewing. They're Pacific Northwest hops still, but they're not the, you know, this got to have varieties. They're, you know, unsung varieties. So Summit and Palisade are examples of the hops that we use in Road to Ruin to kind of give it its signature character, which I would describe as being, as having a strong citrus fruit component, particularly tangerine. And it's, you know, it's again about the hops, but it's not, the hops are not so dominant that they stick on the palate, you know, endlessly. You know, I believe in balance, but this one is more about hops than it is malt. It has both. And we make beers of...
You know, for a double IPA, it's pretty well balanced.
And again, I think balance should always come into any style of beer, regardless of how extreme it might be, one end to the other. There's always got to be a give and take, I think.
So what kind of a brewery staff do you have? I mean, we've got... Emily does, like, merchandise and PR, and John's a rep, and... But you're running the brewery operations. Like, how many staff do you have, and what are the jobs that actually have to get done here?
Well, we have, all told, we have, we're pushing 60 employees here. And that includes, you know, bar staff, people like John who are out in the field selling the beer. You know, we have a lot of people who work here. So, you know, we're working three shifts in the brewery, 5 days a week, 24 hours.
Does that mean you're brewing... Day and night.
Day and night, 5 days a week. And by this summer, we'll be 24/7. So we currently have three brewers on each shift, sometimes four. And that's just going to grow this year. So, you know, the brewing staff is pushing 12 people at this point. You know, sales, we have, and I don't quote me on numbers, but something like 10 to 12 people in sales. Emily's does social media.
Yes, I'm the marketing department.
And marketing.
And how do you hire brewers? I mean, because you're probably going to be hiring more brewers.
Well, you know, we do get a lot of people sending emails and resumes saying, hey, I'd love to work in the brewery. And most of our brewing staff has kind of come up through the ranks. Even, you know, whether before Two Roads, there were a number of people on our staff who volunteered in breweries because they really wanted to do it. So they worked for free. And knowing that when they come here and apply is certainly worth something, because it knows it truly love brewing. And over the years, I've seen any number of people who said, oh, that'd be really cool to work in a brewery. And then they spend a couple of days and realize that, you know, it's not glamorous work, at least to start off. It's physical work, and you're doing a lot of cleaning.
That's why I'm not a brewer.
Pulling hoses around.
I hate the cleaning part.
You know, it's,
I like,
so
the drinking part.
Yeah. Well, that's why you have a bar. So it's, you know, that's kind of a good filter. If somebody really is truly into brewing and is passionate about it, then chances are they're a good hire. So we've kind of used that criteria successfully so far. And, you know, we have a tremendous staff, you know, the sales side, marketing, brewing, bar staff, everybody is just, we have a really fantastic team here, and it's great.
One thing I always wanted to ask is, you know, you've brewed in different facilities and over the years, when you opened here at Two Roads, like what was the learning curve for you as a brewer working with the system here?
I got to say it was pretty substantial because, you know, in spite of having been in the business 20-some-odd years before we started Two Roads, I had never worked with a system this large. Well, I've worked with, as a contract brewer in other facilities, with systems this large and larger, but I wasn't responsible for their operation. And here, this is a much more sophisticated system than I had previously been exposed to. This is a state-of-the-art brewery we have here. And there's, you know, latest technology and automation that we utilize to brew our beers. And the advantage there is that brewing being a time-sensitive operation, if you can automate portions of it, then you get more consistent results batch to batch. So That's a huge advantage, and that was something new to me, frankly. So there was a lot to learn here, and it's a big place, and it's sophisticated equipment. So it was a far cry from what I had been used to, which was primarily working on pub systems and you know, being a some homemade system. So it was a good leap, but we survived.
And when you make a new beer, I mean, do you make it on the full system, or do you make it in like a test batch first? How do you go about creating your recipes?
I mean, because we didn't have many other options, I've often just jumped right in. I've been doing this long enough where I feel comfortable jumping right in. But now, here at Two Roads, we're about to christen our pilot brew system, and that will be an added attraction for people to come visit our tap room, because we'll have, on average, two different beers on tap available only in our tasting room per month, including a single varietal hop extra pale ale series. So we've gotten a bunch of experimental hops that are not currently available on the market, and we're going to be doing some single hop brews, and we'll learn from it, and our customers will learn from it.
The tasting room here is awesome. I love the fact you're making the beers here. I feel like there's more people being drawn to going to tasting rooms and breweries. So, Emily, I mean, what's a typical crowd like that comes here to Stratford to taste beers on site?
During the week, there's a lot of we have tons of regulars. I mean, you walk up there and everyone knows everyone's name. All the tasting room staff are, it's a real family environment because it's a lot of locals. On the weekends, I mean, 21-year-old college students from the local, university up to, full families, anyone over 21, because it's a 21 and up place, but, grandparents are here. I've taken my aunt and uncle here, even on a tour. I mean, the age and the diversity of the tasting room is insane, and it's really cool to see everyone coming to try the beers. Even if they don't like beer, there's always something that they can find that they like. It's really cool, the tour. When I see pictures of people on the tour, it's a real diverse crowd. It's really cool to see. And since we're right off 95, you get off exit 31,
metro New York City.
Yeah,
much.
It's really easy to get to here. And then when you get off the exit, we're right there. So it's a really great destination. Actually, we just got approval by the state Department of Transportation for attraction signs on the highway, designated by the Department of Transportation. So when you're driving on the highway, there's going to be a sign that says attraction, exit 31, Two Roads Brewing. It's going to be really, really cool. So thank you, Connecticut.
That's cool. And I will say, we're up on the second floor here in the tasting room. And you look out, there's it's this quaint old, New England town, and you've got the little Citgo gas station. But then you've got the little houses that are just there's so much 1950s and earlier New England. This is one of these towns that's caught in this beautiful era. And I would say it's worth coming out here to Stratford, Connecticut, anytime. And I'm going to come out more often. But hey, we're still going to check out. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're doing a special Beer Week episode up here in Stratford, Connecticut at Two Roads Brewing with Master Brewer Phil Markowski. So, Phil, earlier we talked about, I said, I know if I come to your brewery and in the tasting room, I'm going to get super fresh, quality-controlled beer, and the lines are going to be clean. But the reason I mention that is that many, many great bars in New York City are doing the same thing. There's good beer seal bars and other really great beer bars in New York City where we know their lines are getting cleaned, they have great management, and they're also getting the best and freshest beers in. But it does happen to me sometimes where I'm out at a bar that might not be noted as a craft beer bar, but has a good lineup of beers, and I've had the lines not being clean. And so I don't want to disparage any bars, but I would say that I feel that the breweries have to really get behind making sure that the accounts they're serving at are really doing their best to step it up in terms of freshness and cleanliness. And I don't know if you guys as brewers ever talk about that or have to talk to your sales staff about that, but it's becoming a bigger issue for me as I go out and I'm like, wow, there's hundreds of places in New York City for New York City Beer Week, but maybe some of them I don't want to drink the beer at.
Well, there is a reality that there's a small minority of places that maybe don't clean their lines as often, maybe aren't conscious about moving the beer through very quickly, and you know, for those reasons, they're not as busy with craft beer drinkers, so they don't turn the beer around. I mean, what's unprecedented now in my mind is there's so many places that have the utmost respect for beer, for craft beer, and do their due diligence in keeping their lines clean, of keeping all conditions optimal to serve the freshest beer possible. But for those places that don't necessarily have that degree of knowledge or education, it is still a problem where you do have to police what they do. And again, relying on people like John and our sales staff to identify that problem and then address it is still a challenge in craft brewing today. But I can say that it is much better than it used to be. And that again, there's so many places that have great respect for craft beer and beer in general, and at whatever expense it takes, have clean lines, have just the right equipment to dispense the beer properly.
One thing that I look for, so there's not like a certificate. I have a feeling that the industry is going to get together sometime soon and start giving a certificate towards, you know, beer bars and restaurants that really have clean lines and are doing their best thing. We have the Good Brew Seal, this cask mark that came over from England. So we're going to do some more shows about that in March. But for the near term, the way I've always judged it is a litmus test. And I'm like, oh, if you have a Two Roads on, or in the city, the Barrier, or other half, there's certain breweries that only the finest establishments are able to get and are aware of. So I feel like you have to judge the beer bar by also the beer that it's serving. And I don't know how you feel about that, John, as a sales rep. Do you target certain bars and look for certain beers when you're out in the city?
I mean, to a certain extent, yes. I mean, we want to be a part of all of the top craft beer accounts in New York, for sure. That doesn't mean we're not, you know, spreading our wings and going into other places as well, because I think, you know, I think we're making such quality beer that, it doesn't have to be just for craft beer bars. That said, you know, thankfully, I've run into very, very few occasions where we've had issues with lines or anything else. Really, like less, like I can count them on less than one hand. So, it's been really good. So, I think even the the places that aren't necessarily considered the top craft beer bars, I think they're even starting to get into the idea of what they have to do to really maintain craft beer customers and, you know, us as craft beer clients, and you know, the quality standards are high, and you know, if something doesn't taste right, it's not going to move. So, and that's also part of my job, and like Phil was saying, you know, like I have to go in and make sure it's tasting all right, and that's actually one of the better parts of the job, is because I get to go and have a pint and test it out. So I'm not complaining at all. But yeah, it's 99% of the time it tastes as it should. So makes my job easier.
Well, I like the beers we're tasting today. I'll tell you that.
All right, good deal.
So what's this next beer, Emily?
This is Unorthodox. This is our rye Russian Imperial Stout, 9.2%. It's one of our year rounds. Comes in a 22-ounce. And
draft.
Yeah, and draft, and it's so think of it as an aggressively hoppy Russian Imperial Stout. So kind of a, you know, again, a roadless travel kind of beer. And when did we introduce this?
In the fall? Let's see, it was October, November.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's become one of our year-round beers.
I had the full experience. I started with the pills.
Yeah.
I drove up here. I needed an after-drive beer. Then I had the workers' comp Saison, then we had the Road to Ruin Double IPA, and now we're on to this beautiful beer, Unorthodox. Wow.
Yeah.
How do you do it, Phil? I mean, how do you do it? you're a master of many
styles. Water and barley and hops, and wait a couple of weeks, and you're there.
How's the waiting for you?
On
a side note, you've probably heard in Finland they have the Sati beer.
Yes.
And our friends at Be United up not too far from here in Oxford, Connecticut, they brought a Pekka, the Sati maker, from Finland over a few weeks ago, and he made a small batch of Sati at their compound in Oxford. And we've been waiting for that to be released to the city. But that's just one batch of beer, you know? I don't know. These are thoughts I have. I'm also getting lost. This is unorthodox. Now I'm just getting like anecdotal, you know.
That's okay. You're allowed. It's your show. No, but I mean, you know, brewing is second nature to me now, and it's but that said, there's still a lot of mystery to it, and still this kind of excitement that, you know, see a batch bubbling away and know the kind of transformation that's taking place from something that's kind of this sweet syrupy mixture before you add the yeast, and then the yeast transforms it for you into this whole different thing. That excitement hasn't worn off after all these years. I mean, it's still there. It still seems like magic sometimes, like I'm a participant in this magic thing. So there's still this, even though I'm old, I've been doing this 25 years, there's still this childlike enthusiasm that comes through at times. And that's why I love brewing. And it is never boring to me. It's never old hat. It's always exciting.
How did you make this beer? This is amazing.
We started with water. but it, you know, this has this beer, unorthodox. Much of its complexity derives from the different types of malts, and there's 8 different malts in this beer, including roasted barley, which is an essential part of any stout, black malt, caramel malt, wheat malt, Munich malt, which is a base malt that's more highly roasted, and then of course Pilsner malt. So all of these things combine, and rye malt is a significant part of this recipe. There's that spiciness, that kind of dryness that you get from rye malt that's in here, and then the hops. So it's not one-sided. Again, I believe in balance.
It's very balanced.
It's not
it's not too roasty. Some of these imperial stouts are too roasty and they almost burn your mouth. And it's not too alcoholic. What's the ABV on this?
It's 9.2.
It tastes really well balanced. So I guess you're saying you're well balanced beer.
Right. The alcohol. I don't want. And the alcohol is the other component. You know, you have malt, you have hops, and you have alcohol, and I don't want either one to dominate. So they all kind of work together. Maybe at times you pick one out more than the other. And then seconds later, that changes. So that's, to me, that's the goal of a well-made beer is to have that kind of balance that you can't quite pin down one thing over the other.
John, as a sales staff here, mm-hmm. I mean, how does Two Roads conduct tastings for you guys? And I mean, do you guys just taste in a group, or are you guys? How do you talk about the beers that they're making? Because there's so many different beers.
Are you saying when I sell, or
when you're learning about a beer at the brewery as a team?
Oh well, we just
how do you guys do it?
We worship at the altar of Phil. honestly, I mean it's a joke, but seriously though, we get our sales team together, and honestly, we learn so much when we have Phil come and talk about each beer, and we try to do it every time, even the beers that we know and love. And have known for years now, we'll have Phil go back over them, because there's always new things that he hits upon that it's like, oh yeah, that, you know, I always go back to lychee.
Oh, lychee fruit, yes.
Yeah, which I still don't even really know for sure what that is, but I know it's a fruit, and it's found in a couple of our beers, the flavors. But no, honestly, we always have Phil talk to us about all the beers, and especially the new ones, and it's always exciting, because then he'll let us in on a couple secrets about upcoming plans, and we all get into a tizzy. So, yeah, it's all about Phil.
This beer is great because I know it's a strong beer. It's a Russian Imperial Stout, unorthodox, but at 9.5%, it makes sense, and it really is well balanced. And I'm repeating what you said.
That's all right.
I like that because there's too many times. I'm pissed off. I love so many great craft beers, but I'm pissed when something just doesn't work. You know, and I'm tired of beers that are too strong but taste too strong. You know, this I could drink all night, even at 9.5%. I think I am tonight. We're still here in Stratford, Connecticut. But Emily, what about you? So I want to showcase also the really interesting people that you have working here. You know, you've got John, who was in MTV and had his own, you know, beer-tography thing. But Emily, you've got this kind of semi-famous beer cartoon. What's it called again?
It's called Pints and Panels. I've been doing it since May of 2010, so about 5 years. I started it when I was at a student at the Center for Cartoon Studies, which is a real place in Vermont where you can get your MFA in cartooning. And I left a pretty lucrative job in finance to go there, much to the dismay of my mother. That was a terrible conversation.
But
to
you
have.
Make beer cartoons. Just give us so it's tell us the site and a little.
So yeah, it's Pints and Panels, and I update it twice a week. I've done about 500 or so beer reviews, and they're all positive because I have the feeling that, you know, beer should be a very positive experience, and so and craft beer now, especially after the past couple of years, quality is just. Really, the quality of most craft beer is really high, so you know you're going to have a good beer experience regardless of what you're drinking. So, I usually draw them on weekends and post them Tuesdays and Thursdays on my website, and yeah, it's a hobby, but it's a lot of fun to do, and I get to drink a lot of really cool beers in the process. So, and draw. Well, so
it's cool that you're working here. I think I'm trying to get to this. Two Roads is the Essence is a very cool place. And I still love this, the quaint New England town. I'll tell you that again. Being here, because I grew up in New England too, and it's like, wow, these old houses haven't changed, the old gas station hasn't changed, but there's this brand new brewery here. I mean, no. It must mean something to the community, right, to have a brewery
here? Oh, it's great.
Here.
It's great. And also, somebody who's going to come to Stratford for the first time, you're making it sound like Vermont, Jimmy.
Yeah. It is actually a pretty beautiful town.
It is.
And we have the beach and the town square and whatnot, but yeah, it's still an old, you know, it's an old mill town.
Yeah, so. And there's unfortunately more and more. There are plenty of abandoned buildings here, but the things we discovered when we were renovating this building to create Two Roads, there's just lots of character that you can still see in our tasting room. There's still the original floors from 1911. That are clear maple floors, which I don't know if you can buy clear maple these days, but clear maple, and then there's divots throughout the room where they used to do machining up on that level. So somebody's footprints over decades and decades wore divots in the floor that are still there. And just to kind of see that, come into the tasting room, see that, and realize the history of this building, how long it's been around, how many people have... you know, walked its corridors over the years, it just really warms the heart. You know, it's a great feeling to know that we're just continuing
something.
Every brewery
is different. You don't know what to expect. You know, go up to Cooperstown, Omegang is a pastoral setting, and, you know, it's by a lake. And there's other breweries that are just little industrial, you know, spaces. But this is really one of the more beautiful brewery and tasting rooms I've been to. So I would say, if you're in New York City, come up here, come up to Stratford, check it out. You're having a great time. And I think you can drink. Like, what are the tasting room hours? Because I feel like I could drink for like 10 hours here.
We're open every day except Monday. Tuesday through Saturday, 12 to 9. Sundays, 12 to 7. We do tours Fridays at 6:30. Saturdays we do tours on the hour, so 12 to 5 every hour.
So I can't drink for 10 hours here.
You can drink for 9 hours.
You can drink for 9 hours. And then Sundays 1, 3, and 5 we do tours. And our tours are done by a couple of our scientists. We have a staff of 3 scientists. 3. 2 of them do tours. And Kendra. Yeah, we have our amazing Yale PhD microbiologist on staff who's... birthday it is today. Happy birthday, Kendra.
Super smart people.
Super smart people doing amazing things. And then, yeah, we've got an amazing... I've never heard a single bad thing about our tour ever. It's $5. We give you plenty of beer. We teach you a lot about the brewing process. It's an hour. I've never heard anyone say anything bad about our tour.
So Phil Markowski. So there's a lot of great people that we know. They're home brewers. A lot of people are home brewers are talking about becoming pro brewers. Or people are just young and they want to work in a brewery. How would you recommend somebody to get started these days?
Well, fortunately, there are more opportunities to get started these days. I think the most important thing is follow your passion, you know, follow your heart. If brewing is what you're truly passionate about, then find a way to get into doing it professionally. And again, there are more opportunities these days, fortunately. We are growing here at Two Roads, and somebody's truly into brewing or wants to get into the physical side of making beer, send us a resume.
All right, well, I'll say this has been an enjoyable day, and I'm going to stay here all night and hang out until the taste room closes.
9 o'clock.
Yeah. At Two Roads in Stratford, Connecticut. I recommend, if you're in New York City, please come up here. It's a short visit. But we had great guests tonight. Phil Markowski, head brewer at Two Roads. John Kleinchester, our New York City rep, and Emily Salter, who does the PR here. Lots going on. And in closing, I'd like to thank our sponsors at Union Beer Distributors who have helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Thanks to Phil, John, and Emily for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I've had way too many unorthodox Russian Imperial Stouts, but I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Maggie Seiden and Justin Kennedy, and to our engineer, Jack Inslee. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Yeah.